Welcome to Non-Human Entities YouTube channel. Please subscribe, like, and share if you enjoy this show.
Good evening, John DiNardo. This is Michael Vera with Late Night in the Midlands. How are you?
Hi, Michael. I'm fine, and I'm happy to be with you and your audience.
I am looking forward to having you here with us tonight. It's always a pleasure, John, and you're coming in nice, loud, and clear. So I appreciate that as well. So, John, I just seen an article where they say that apparently this is from NASA that says that an asteroid's going to have a very, very close flyby on Halloween night. I don't know if you know about that or where you'd like to start, but I thought that'd be a good starting point.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard about that one specifically because there are so many asteroids and meteors that have been detected by NASA, the Near Earth Objects team that we have, I believe, is frantically searching and tracking many of these objects. I think there's a great concern because they're trying desperately to develop the technology to divert any objects that may be threatening to hit Earth. And that's what's going on right now. A lot of it, of course, is all kept secret because they don't want to panic the public. However, if you look at the International Space Station and look at the news events that were in the back portions of the news, barely noticeable in the news over the last several years, you'll detect that large amounts apparatus and equipment have been launched up to the International Space Station over the last several years. It numbers, I believe, in the many tons, maybe as much as 100 tons of equipment has been sent up there. And many of these launches have not even, I don't believe, have been fully reported to the public. So there's a lot of, they're trying to develop, I believe, my suspicion or surmisal based upon what we know to be true and inferences that we can make regarding the space threat of comets and asteroids. The suspicion is that they're trying to develop equipment that would deter these objects, shoot them down, or divert them. In fact, in many of the science TV broadcasts that we see nowadays on the Science Channel, the Smithsonian Channel, the History 2 Channel, the National Geographic Channel, you'll see reports where they're developing ways to deter these objects that are quite sophisticated, ways that are sophisticated in that, for example, they talk about coloring, shooting some reflective paint at some of these asteroids that are threatening Earth so that the sun's light will reflect off of the object, the threatening asteroid, or the sun's light will be absorbed so as to change its energy and thus change its trajectory slightly. And of course, there are many other methods too, you know, pushing them gravitationally, putting out a gravitational probe with a very powerful magnetic field that would also affect the asteroid, because asteroids probably have magnetic metals in them. So there is a great concern over the threats. Yes, indeed. There have been meteor strikes, the most infamous of which is the February 2013 meteor strike in Chelyabinsk, Russia, that caused great destruction and much injury and loss of life, I believe. We all remember that. And there were a number of other objects that accompanied that meteor. Oh, incidentally, that meteor was in a gang of gravitationally captured objects from an asteroid that was passing on the very same day. And they never told us that, you know, they said, well, it's a coincidence that this near-Earth asteroid just barely missed Earth on the same day that a meteor struck Russia and caused destruction. Well, obviously, that was not a coincidence, not a random coincidence. That meteor and others gravitationally captured by the meteor were part of like a shot, basically a celestial shotgun blast that hit Earth. Some of the objects were, there were some impacts around Cuba, as I recall, too. So, yes, we're getting more meteor strikes. This year, I had posted information that was completely covered up by the American press, and also, I believe, by the European press. The only way I was able to verify it was through an Italian newspaper report, and also I was fortunate enough to find a video documentary, a video report done by Iranian journalists in Iran where the meteors had actually struck. And I have actually posted that. I still have the link in one of the emails that I posted to many reporters showing the actual interview where the Iranian journalists went out into the countryside and spoke with the farmers who lived in an area that was struck by several meteorites, and they actually pulled the meteor out of the ground and showed the reporter, and they held it right up to the camera. That's on YouTube. That's documented. Why did the U.S. government totally cover that up? And there was reports in the American press saying that this was a hoax. There was no meteor strike. Why would they go out of their way to deny something unless it was true? And that reminds me of the major, the big threat, the big celestial object, Planet X. Why would the government go out of their way to have NASA hacks and mouthpieces tell us that Planet X doesn't exist and it's a lot of hysteria, it's put out by conspiracy theorists? And why would they do that if it really wasn't true? They would just leave it alone because, you know, it would die, the story would die on its own, but they're not. They had one of their noted mouthpieces recently make an announcement that if Planet X were really true and it's not, then we would have seen it by now. Now, NASA knows. They've even reported in their newspaper articles going back a third of a century ago. They know that this object cannot be seen with conventional light sources, and it can only be seen with infrared telemetry. And in fact, they launched their infrared astronomical satellite in 1983 and actually discovered it because they knew that this object was an infrared light-emitting object. So they're lying to us right there when they told us just a few years ago. It was a NASA public announcement stating that if Planet X were coming, we would have seen it by now.
And you know what I wonder, John, and you know how me, I'm kind of on the fence. It's like I know there's something out there. I just never could tell anybody where. But I had Coast to Coast AM's science advisor on, Bob Zimmerman, and he kind of laughed at the notion and said that there's absolutely nothing out there. Now, I would ask, why did guys like this who have the credentials they do, how come they, you know, are they all being silenced?
Somebody got to them, yeah. Because, give me his quote again. What did he say?
Well, I don't know his exact quote.
Paraphrasing.
But he says that it's just, no, there's no scientific evidence whatsoever of anything such as Planet X. He said there's nothing, no threat at all out there.
Right there, it tells me that there's deception, because if he were really being scientifically honest, and we know he has studied the subject, he would have said, yes, there is a history of detecting a gravitational body out beyond Pluto, but still gravitationally attracted by our sun, close enough, 5 billion miles away, to be exact. Back in 1983, it was estimated to be 5 billion miles away based upon the size that they had computed. You see, the mass is to determine the distance away, they had to know the mass of it when they sent their up a probe in 1978 called the Pioneer 10 space probe, which was designed to detect a gravitational pull on a space probe from this body, which they had calculated was out there. And so they have to know the mass of it. So assuming that it was as large as their scientists, the greatest scientists of the day of 1983 said, they believed that it's a brown dwarf star. Now, by definition, a brown dwarf star is the minimum, puniest brown dwarf star is about 3 Jupiter masses.
Whew.
Now, the mass of Jupiter is scientifically proven to be 318 Earth masses. So when you get an object that is at least the size of 3 Jupiter masses, that's 3 times 318 Earths, you're getting close to 1,000 Earth masses. So with a mass that great, as you know, mass is directly proportional to the gravitational force of attraction exerted by that mass. So as this object comes in, because it's being drawn in by our sun is much, much more massive than this object. So our sun is like the anchor man. It's not going to move. The sun is going to move this brown dwarf star because the sun is scientifically proven to be 1/3 of a million Earth masses, nearly 1/3 of a million Earth masses. That's a lot more than 1,000 Earth masses, which is the estimated size of this incoming dwarf star.
Yeah.
So the sun is pulling it in. It's by basic physics, there's no way to escape the reality that when an object is falling, this object is falling, literally falling into the sun. I mean, just as the meteor gets close to Earth, gets within Earth's gravitational field, that meteor is inexorably pulled toward the Earth by Earth's gravitational force field. There's no way that meteor can escape unless it has enough tangential momentum to overcome the pull of gravitational force of the Earth. However, this object is being pulled pretty much in a straight line. It's not really a straight line. It's a very highly elongated elliptical orbit. But for all intents and purposes, it's not tangential to the sun, such as our planets are. That's why our planets do not fall into the sun. Jupiter doesn't fall into the sun. Earth doesn't fall into the sun because they're in a revolution around the sun and a centrifugal force, the outward pulling force, centrifugal force of the Earth keeps it from falling into the sun. Likewise, the centrifugal force of Jupiter and Mars and all the other planets revolving around the sun prevent them from being pulled into the sun. So there's a very delicate balance between the sun's pull on Earth and Earth's centrifugal force, which keeps it in its proper orbit, where and it's amazing. You have to realize that there must be some great being, some entity who created all this, because it's great. It's much more than coincidence that we are in an orbit that is just right for human life to survive.
And John, do you think this is why they sent the probe out towards Pluto? Are they trying to see what's yanking on everything out there?
Yes, I have the article. In fact, they come out and state it. Back then, in 1968, they were not secretive because they were the National Security Agency had not really grabbed control of them, and they were not really concerned too much because the NSA really didn't understand the great public concern that would result from the knowledge of this object. So therefore, they were pretty free in their information back then. That's why you have to go back to the old reports, and I've got a big folder here. I've got all kinds of books on Planet X in front of me Oh, it's just amazing. I don't know where to begin.
wherever you'd like.
But I'm going through my reports, and I do have here the New York Times. I went to my county library and went through a lot of trouble to photocopy from the microfilm archives reports, and I've got it right here. I think I've got this. I've got to really post this on my Facebook page and send it out to a lot of people, like such as you. But I've got the New York Times report photocopied. It's pretty clear, too, from the microfilm library. June 19th, 1982, New York Times. I'm going to read subject, spacecraft may detect mystery body in space. This is June 19th, 1982. Sunnyvale, California. A pair of American spacecraft may help scientists detect what could be a 10th planet or a giant object billions of miles away, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration said Thursday. Scientists at the space agency's Ames Research Center said the two spacecraft, Pioneers 10 and 11, which are already farther into space than any other man-made objects, might add to knowledge of a mysterious object believed to be beyond the solar system's outermost known planets. The space agency said that persistent irregularities in the orbits of Uranus and Neptune suggest some kind of mystery object is really there, unquote, with its distance depending on what it is. If the mystery object is a new planet, it may lie 5 billion miles beyond the outer orbital ring of known planets, the space agency said. If it is a dark star type of object, now a dark star would be like a baby star, which would be much, much more massive than the known planet that they just hypothesized. If it is a dark star type of object, it may be 50 billion miles beyond the known planets. If it is a black hole, well, forget about that. That's too much, too. That's, you know, it would be 100 billion miles. A black hole is a hypothetical body in space believed to be a collapsed star so condensed that neither light nor matter can escape from its gravitational field. Well, we know it's not a black hole, but it's, again, later on I will read you the article, a landmark article from the New York Times, not 1982 as this one is, but 1983, where they launched the infrared astronomical satellite, and the quotation from that regarding the question as to this object's size. The quotation that I find, one of them is very key and important here, is that more credence. Yeah, here it is. In the New York Times, which I'm going to read later, 1983, the following year, more credence was given to the hypothesis that a brown dwarf star accounts for the mysterious force that is being exerted on Neptune and Uranus. So they're the best scientists of the day considered it to be a brown dwarf star. So anyway, that's what they sent. You're right. To answer to your question, they did launch the Pioneer 10 and 11 because they wanted to see, they toured in the direction of this object. Pioneer 10 went in the reverse direction. I'm sorry. Pioneer 11 went in the reverse direction. That acted as a control vehicle, so they could compare the non-gravitational pull of Pioneer 11 as it reached the outer bounds of the solar system in the opposite direction. Say it was going south, and the Pioneer 10 was launched northward, but they both got out to the outer bounds of the solar system at the same time. So forget about 11. Pioneer 11 was simply a control object to make sure, so they can compare the non-pole, non-gravitational pull with the gravitational pull. Well, when Pioneer 10 got to where their calculations told them this object was located, I believe they detected a gravitational pull on the Pioneer 10. And I remember reading somewhere, I'm trying to remember the source, but in fact it's somebody who had with background knowledge in the space agency said that they did detect a gravitational pull. So the Pioneer 10 was the first indication that it was there. Now, of course, they'll say, well, we don't, you know, we, it didn't happen. But if you look at the records, and I ask people to help me in his research by checking to see what was the answer that we got from the space agency, from NASA, as to whether or not this Pioneer 10 actually detected a gravitational, was pulled. Was it pulled off of its trajectory by the great gravitational force of this sought after object, or was it not? What the space agency never told us, to my the best of my knowledge. But again, as I said, some space researchers who have gotten inside knowledge said they indeed they detected a gravitational pull on Pioneer 10. Now, here's more evidence that there was to indicate that indeed there was a gravitational pull on the Pioneer 10 space probe by Planet X. And that indication is that they later, the very next year, this was not, I just read you a 1982, June 1982 report. Yeah. A few months later, January 1983, NASA launched the infrared astronomical satellite to detect Planet X. So they had it on the headlines of the paper, of the newspaper. I mean, they were proudly declaring that they were seeking it. This was before they were muzzled by NASA. So there's your indication right there that indeed there was a pull on Pioneer 10, a gravitational pull from Planet X, because otherwise they would not have sent up the spent all this money and all went through this effort to send up the infrared astronomical satellite the very next year to sight Planet X. Because, again, what was the satellite doing? It wasn't detecting a pull. It was using infrared telescopes to detect, to sight in on the object, which they had already recently discovered by the gravitational pull on Pioneer 10 space probe. So there you go. There's your tacit evidence right there that indeed it did, it was being pulled. Pioneer 10 was pulled. And here's the article that I'm referring to, the later article, New York Times, Sunday, January 30th, 1983. Just suffice it to remember it was January 83, because later on I'm going to read you an article from the Washington Post, December 83. So we got these two landmark reports in the two major newspapers of the world. The New York Times in January of 1983 and the Washington Post in December of 1983. So the first month of the year and the last month of the year. These are the key reports. Here's the one from January 1983, New York Times. Clues get warm in the search for Planet X. They made no concealment at all. They were proud to meant to state to the world that the scientists and the astronomers of NASA were proud to state to the entire world through the New York Times that they were searching for Planet X. Quote by John Noble Wilford, New York Times, something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system seems to be tugging at Uranus and Neptune. Some gravitational force keeps perturbing the two giant planets, causing irregularities in their orbits. The force suggests a presence far away and unseen, a large object that may be the long-sought Planet X. Evidence assembled in recent years has led several groups of astronomers to renew the search for the 10th planet. They are devoting more time to visual observations with the 200-inch telescope at Mount Palomar in California. They are tracking two Pioneer spacecraft now approaching the orbit of distant Pluto to see if variations in their trajectories provide clues to the source of the mysterious force. That's what we just discussed.
So, 10. Someone just told me, John, that it made USA Today in 1983. Today. So.
USA Today in what date was the USA Today?
I think in 1983. So another article that maybe you could look up sometime.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not sure if USA Today even existed in 1983. I may be wrong.
I don't know either.
But, I mean, there were many reports. I mean, Marshall Masters of YOWUSA.com, Marshall Masters is a great Planet X researcher also, and he had posted many newspaper articles. I think they're actually photocopies, too. I have it somewhere in my computer.
Well, I had questioned Marshall Masters once about one of the pictures that he had presented. Now, he used to be a guest on this show on a regular basis. But if I see something that looks out of the ordinary, I'll ask. And you know, I've always given him free rein. And this time I seen somebody, one of the listeners, pointed out one of his pictures had the Planet X object was in front of the cloud. So I asked him about it, and I said, how can this be? And his reply was, F off. And he had never talked to me again. As a matter of fact, he put an article about how I'm a fed or something because I asked that question. So
wow.
So
he said that on the air?
Well, no, not on the air. We had just got done with that show that night, and I think it was the next day or 2 days later I had asked him about it. And, yeah, he cursed me out. And I'm thinking a real researcher would say, oh, goodness, show me the flaw so me personally, I don't trust him, but.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why people should not get emotional about this. I mean, we've all been criticized for some reports at some time in our lives, but, you know, we should just do our best, as you say, to handle it and put out the truth as we know it. Without becoming emotional.
Absolutely. That's why I have you on, because, you know, you're always straightforward and, you know, you don't get upset when somebody asks a tough question.
Well, thank you, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, in this article here, I'll try to cut out some of it because it is a very lengthy article, but it's a landmark article from the New York Times. As they say here, and they're hoping that a satellite-borne telescope launched last week. This is, again, January 1983. They're hoping that a satellite-borne telescope launched last week will detect heat signatures from the planet, or whatever it is out there. The infrared astronomical satellite, IRAS, was boosted into a 560-mile-high polar orbit Tuesday night from Vandenberg Air Force Base, California. It represents, and this is interesting because several countries were in on this project in 1983. It represents an $80 million venture. Wow, that's cheap by today's standards. Huh. An $80 million venture by the United States, Britain, and the Netherlands. In the next 6 or 7 months, this infrared telescope is expected to conduct a wide-ranging survey of nearly all the sky, detecting sources not of ordinary light, but of infrared radiation, which is invisible to the human eye and largely absorbed by the atmosphere. Scientists thus hope that the new telescope will chart thousands of infrared-emitting objects that have gone undetected, stars, interstellar clouds, asteroids, and with any luck, the object that pulls at Uranus and Neptune. So you can see that the primary mission of this launch of the infrared astronomical satellite was to detect Planet X. In fact, that's the big headline right here. Clues get warm in the search for Planet X. And they go on to say, and I'll try to condense some of this information for the sake of brevity. they go on to say that there was, in 1930, they were looking for Planet X. Excuse me. The great astronomer Percival Lowell, L-O-W-E-L-L, had constructed, these is my words now, I'm not reading, had constructed the Lowell Observatory in Arizona, where the skies are clear, to try to detect Planet X. This was his life's mission, Percival Lowell. And in what they found, his chief astronomer named Clyde Tombaugh, later on in 1930, discovered Pluto while in the process of initially trying to discover Planet X. That's why in around the year 1900, Percival Lowell constructed the Lowell Observatory. And so it's been sought. This object, Planet X, has been sought for not only 100 years, not only since 1900, but since around 1830, when, according to this article, a very well-documented New York Times article, I guess I'll read it here. I'll read the rest of it. As astronomers observed Uranus, noting irregularities in its orbital path, many speculated, this, we're going back to the 1800s now, as astronomers observed Uranus, noting irregularities in its orbital path, many speculated that they were witnessing the gravitational pull of an unknown planet. So began the first planetary search based on astronomers' predictions, which ended in the 1840s with the discovery of Neptune, almost simultaneously by English, French, and German astronomers. But Neptune was not massive enough to account entirely for the orbital behavior of Uranus. Indeed, Neptune itself seemed to be affected by a still more remote planet. In the late 19th century, two American astronomers, William Pickering and Percival Lowell, predicted the size and approximate location of this trans-Neptunian body, which Lowell called Planet X. Years later, Pluto was detected by Clyde Tombaugh, working at the Lowell Observatory in Arizona. Well, anyway, I'll try to cut out a little bit more. Okay. Recent calculations by the United States Naval Observatory have confirmed the orbital perturbation exhibited by Uranus and Neptune, which Dr. Thomas Van Flandern, an astronomer at the observatory, says could be explained by, quote, a single undiscovered planet. Recent calculations by the United States Naval Observatory have confirmed the orbital perturbation exhibited by Uranus and Neptune. So Thomas Van Flandern, great astronomer at the U.S. Naval Observatory, and his chief astronomer, who was Dr. Robert S. Harrington, both of them confirmed that indeed, these two planets, Uranus and Neptune, these gas giants, were being pulled out of their orbit at a particular point in their revolution around the sun. And there's only one thing that could pull them out, and that is a huge gravitational body. Again, it goes on to say that Dr. Van Flandern and his colleague, Dr. Robert Harrington, calculate that this 10th planet should be 2 to 5 times more massive than Earth and have a highly elliptical orbit. And that's what we talked about. Highly elliptical orbit that takes it some 5 billion miles beyond that of Pluto. Now, this I find to be the most important comment in the entire article. It takes this object 5 billion miles beyond that of Pluto, hardly next door, but still within the gravitational influence of the sun. That means that even though this large brown dwarf star is 5 billion miles out, it's still within the gravitational pull of the sun, which means it is bound to be pulled in. There's no way it can escape unless it's on a tangential orbit, which it was not. And if it was, just think about it. Suppose it was orbiting around the sun all these years. It would have been discovered. Because, look, they discovered Pluto. Tiny little Pluto, which is, a little bit bigger than our moon.
Right. And it was also close enough that, light reflected off it. And I think, that's why we were able to see it, right? So that's my thing has been, if this thing is close enough, if it's anywhere near the distance of Pluto, then we should be able to detect it, right?
Right, especially with our sophisticated infrared telescopes, which they had a third of a century ago, the infrared astronomical satellites. So just imagine what they have today. They've got all... In fact, they have launched so many space telescopes, and you wonder why. Is it because of scientific curiosity? It goes beyond that. They're searching for this object which threatens Earth, threatens all life on Earth. That's what they're really concerned about. I mean, if, that's scientific curiosity is important, but it's not the primary reason why they've launched so many space telescopes, one of which is the Chandra, C-H-A-N-D-R-A, X-ray satellite Observatory, Chandra X-ray Satellite Observatory, which is also able to detect this object, I believe. Where do I go from here? There's so much.
I know that there's also satellites that are on the moon. I read where China actually has a satellite pitched on the moon. So, you know, and they say it's great because there's no atmosphere, so they're able to see.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That I'm sure they would have a satellite out there on the moon. There are things that they're not even telling us about. You know, you've probably done stories on Mars and everything.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just, right, the secrets of Mars, and now they're beginning to unveil some of it publicly. So, you know, they're admitting that they've been lying to us all these decades. I mean, in so many areas they've been lying. There's an astronomer, not an astronomer, but an astronaut. I'm trying to remember his name. Bob Dean. One of them is Bob Dean. And I think he was interviewed by, are you familiar with the Project Camelot?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I am.
Okay, they've interviewed this astronomer. I've got to go find that. I'm glad as we talk, you know, we dredge up memories that we had that are sort of, you know, never at the top of our mind. But as you talk, they emerge. And I remember that recently. I've got to get that interview. It's on the Internet. I've got to download it with Kerry Cassidy of Project Camelot and Bob Dean, and I think it might be another astronaut, I forget his name, that she interviewed with. It's very key because he talks about Planet X and he's got inside information. He was a NASA astronaut, and I'm surprised he's still alive, that they haven't taken him out, because he shouldn't be talking about this stuff, you know. But I think he talks about Planet X, and that is a key source of information. Well, anyway, I'll just finish up this article real quickly.
Okay.
More credence was given to the hypothesis that a brown dwarf star accounts for the mysterious force that's pulling on Uranus and Neptune. Okay, now, a brown dwarf star is, of course, I'll give you what they're saying here is a brown dwarf star is a celestial body that is not massive enough for its thermonuclear furnace to ignite. So anyway, like Jupiter, for example, is not quite big enough to be a brown dwarf star, but it's sort of in the same realm. Jupiter is so massive that it is putting out radio. It is almost creating nuclear fusion by the fusion of hydrogen into helium. And, you know, just as our sun does, that's how our sun puts out its energy. It's a thermonuclear fusion furnace. So anyway, that's what Jupiter is like, a brown dwarf star, only it's not quite large enough to be considered a brown dwarf star. And here's another point they mentioned in this New York Times article from January 30th, 1983. Quote, most stars are paired, so it is not unreasonable to suggest that the sun, this is something they never tell you about anymore. They've covered this up. They're telling us that it's likely here, not unreasonable to suggest that the sun has a dim companion, because even back then, a third of a century ago, they knew that, quote, most stars are paired, come in pairs. So our sun probably has a companion sun somewhere, a dim sun. Well, it turns out that it's a dead sun, but it's still there. It still has its mass. Even though it's dead, its mass is still great enough to pull Planet X back and forth. And our sun pulls it forth, and the dead sun pulls it back. And it goes, and Planet X is like a tennis ball that's batted back and forth gravitationally by our sun and our sun's twin dead sun out there.
How come it's not pulled right into the sun? If it gets caught in the gravity, how come it doesn't collide with our sun?
That's a good point. That's a very good point. By basic physics, it should. However, there's things that we know from history, ancient history, that this planet has come in the past a number of times, and it never hit the sun, but it looped around the sun. You see, there's something And again, very few Planet X researchers out there are highly educated scientists that I know of. I have a bachelor's degree in science education, and I can tell you that from what I can surmise, first of all, we know that the sun has a powerful, our sun has a powerful electromagnetic field. And it puts out, it's called the interplanetary magnetic field. It puts, it's sort of like waves. It puts out waves of electromagnetic energy. And this brown dwarf star also has an electromagnetic field. Just as Jupiter has an electromagnetic field, these are powerful fields. And when two electromagnets begin to get close to one another, it could be for, through God's reckoning or God's divine ordainment, but they, two magnetic fields can either attract or repel one another. And it, by the direction of the magnetic field and the incoming direction of this object, it must repel the sun's magnetic field, and this Planet X's magnetic field must be mutually repulsive rather than mutually attractive. That's what I can, the only thing I can figure. So we're dealing with a magnetic force also. When this object, for example, when this object passes by Earth, this is basic physics now, not only will it have a gravitational pull on Earth, but its magnetic field is also going to influence Earth in a destructive way. So realize that we've got dealing with magnetics, and that's probably the reason why two repelling magnets, the sun and this incoming Planet X, cause it to loop around the sun. Now, we know from ancient history that it has done exactly that, because I can remind me, I want to get back to what it will do to the Earth, because there's prophecy.
Okay.
There's so much prophecy I wanted to talk about, and that is, remind me about the little girls from Garibaldi, Spain. Have you ever heard that? True story.
No.
Of the little girls from Garibaldi, Spain, who in 1964, they were out in a field picking apples. It was a bright, sunny day, no clouds, and all of a sudden there was a loud boom. And an angel of God came, and they went to, fell into a trance. They dropped to their knees very, with great impact, but yet there was no damage to their knees. And they came back yelling and screaming to their mothers that they had, the angel had spoken to them. Well, I guess I'll continue with that story. And this is well documented. I mean, we have films. I've got the films of it, of the Garibaldi, Spain, where the villagers in that town actually took films of the two girls when they were in these trances. They went into these trances many times. And it was an angel of God, they claimed, that spoke to them and told them things. I didn't get the whole story because I haven't researched it. But there's a wonderful documentary done by ABC TV back in 1994-95. I have it on videotape. I put it on, converted it to DVD, and put it on, put parts of it on my YouTube channel. I've got to put the rest of it on the YouTube channel. I consider it a classic. In that video documentary, they talked about basically the end of the world and the ominous signs that Earth was headed for great geological disasters. And they went into a lot of prophecy. Much of it was from the Bible. Some of it was from the Third Secret of Fatima. And some of it was from the Girls Sisters of Garibaldi. And also they did a wonderful piece on Edgar Cayce. I've got to get into later on and talk some more about Edgar Cayce, which is just amazing.
Oh, yeah,
sure,
he's fantastic.
I've done reports on Edgar Cayce.
Oh, yeah, we've had guests on about Edgar Cayce. I mean, what just an amazing guy he was, and what he was able to do.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into that later. But the sisters at Garibaldi, many nights, and they were filmed by the many, I believe it was in the evenings, but some of the film in this documentary called Ancient Prophecies, done by ABC TV in 1994, hosted by the famous British actor David McCallum. In there, they showed films of the sisters, the little girls, I should say, at Garibaldi, Spain in 1964. And when they would go into what they called ecstasy, the girls' eyes would roll to the would roll up, and you see their eyeballs at the top of their eyelids, and they were in a trance, just much like Edgar Cayce's hypnotic trance, because they were being spoken to by angels. And one of the things they were told, and one night, they told the villagers, "You can't follow us." So these girls were well documented. The villagers would follow them and film them quite a bit. Excuse me. One night they said, the girls told the villagers, "You cannot come with us." They were told by the angel that we must be alone. And they went into ecstasy as they normally did, into a hypnotic trance. And they came back screaming. It was called the Night of Screams. And in that, those screams, they were told, they came back and related to the villagers that the angel had told them that there will become, sometime in the future, there will come a great heat over all the world. And the heat will be so intense that people will attempt to kill one another. Now, what I gathered from that, I think it makes a lot of sense. The heat is going to be so intense that there will be a lack of water, there'll be a great thirst. And the great thirst is related to what you read in other prophecies from ancient prophets. The Colburn Bible, for example. In the Colburn Bible, they say that, I'll try to paraphrase it, one of the many things in the Colburn anthology from ancient centuries ago is that land, when the destroyer approaches, mountains will belch forth fire and smoke, fire and ashes. The sea, the oceans will be swallowed up by the land. Oceans will be swallowed up by the land, and the seas will boil. So this indicates there's going to be a tremendous amount of heat, a lack of water, and people, why would people kill one another when this occurs, when there's a lack of water and a tremendous heat? Well, the only way they can get water is to drink blood. Kill each other, take their blood and drink it to survive.
Well, if our magnetic field was to completely go dead, eventually, wouldn't the sun work on our atmosphere and eventually wouldn't our water start to boil?
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense from basic physics. I used to teach high school physics, and that certainly makes a lot of sense because the sun is constantly emitting charged particles, electrons and protons, and when the Earth's magnetic field is destroyed, weakened, debilitated, then the sun's emissions can penetrate through to the surface of Earth. In fact, that's what's been happening right now. Earth's magnetic field is indeed weakening. There are many countless scientific reports saying that the Earth's field magnetic poles are drifting very rapidly. Go ahead.
Could that be, not that I want to give them any credit because they don't deserve any because they're not telling us anything, but the chemtrails, could it be that the magnetic field has weakened, and that's one of the reasons they're spraying what they're spraying, aluminum and barium, because they're trying to ricochet what's the inevitable, maybe?
That's what I agree. That's what I've always believed. And people, and I'm a conspiracy theorist myself, and I know they would try to, the power elite would try to harm us with chemtrails, and that may be one of their purposes, to harm the population with chemtrails. I'm sure it is, because I've seen a lot of reports as to the variety of very nasty compositions that are being sprayed into the atmosphere that seem to have nothing to do with blocking out the sun, but everything to do with poisoning the human race.
Well,
that is true that, you know, that they're trying to hurt us, but I agree. I think one of the main reasons we're putting the chemtrails is to block out the sun, and I'll give you my indications as to why, but go ahead. Tell me.
I was just going to say our friend, the Coast to Coast Science Advisor, also said the chemtrails aren't real either, but I'll just leave that there.
So there you go. So what he told, you can just assume that truth, a liar will lie. The opposite of what he says is true. So if he says there's no planet X, then you know he knows that there really is a planet X.
Well, he should know. Yeah, if that's what I'm saying. But when he hit the chemtrails, that's kind of, I'm sorry. Anybody?
Yeah, when he told you that lie, then you know that the other thing about Planet X was a lie. There's no Planet X.
When somebody tells me that chemtrails aren't real, I don't care who you are. You kind of lose a little credibility with me because I'm not stupid. I know what I'm seeing out there.
And it's so well documented. I mean, chemtrails have been so thoroughly documented.
Yeah.
But, you know, what this great thirst will come. Now, these girls, these little girls, were ignorant little girls. They knew nothing about science at all. And yet, they said this great thirst will come, and it will be from the Lord, the Lord's punishment. And, so many other prophets have said the same thing, that this is the Lord's punishment. And if you go to the Bible, I mean, not only, I'm talking about prophets like Jim Singer from Canada. Have you ever heard of Jim Singer?
Sounds familiar.
He was a Canadian, just a factory manager. He had never thought about prophecy or anything metaphysical or paranormal before in his life. And one time he and his wife, and his wife did an interview with David McCallum again, who did a follow-up of Ancient Prophecies 2, which I have, and the Ancient Prophecies 2 video documentary. And in that, Jim Singer said, If you were to tell me that I was going to do a prophecy, I'd think you're crazy. I never thought about it in my life. But one day, his wife says they were celebrating his birthday, and all of a sudden he went into a trance. It's really crazy, for the first time in his life. And his wife thought he was having a heart attack. And he said he saw a vision of an airplane crash that was in the future. He didn't know where it was, when it was, but it was going to happen in the future. And all you could see was green cornfields, very emerald green cornfields. And in some months later, there was a report in the magazine, the news magazines, about an aircraft that crashed. Now, what God had told Jim Singer in his vision to Jim Singer was that I will make them know my presence and my love. Now, how can God do that? Well, when you're in an airplane and you're an atheist or you don't never think about God very much, all of a sudden your plane starts dropping like a rock. The first thing that everybody in that cabin screams out is, oh, God, please help me.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they do. I mean, everybody whose life is in danger cries, sees God, and the veil of the smoke screen of ignorance vanishes immediately.
Yeah, the first thing they say is, oh, my God, oh, God, please, please, God, please, God.
You know, yeah, so even the atheists will say that.
That's right. No atheists.
Instinctively, because they have a submerged, subconscious knowledge of their creator.
There's no atheist in foxholes, they say.
Right. That's so true. We should do a documentary on all the people that have encountered near-death experiences. And I've been doing that, too, on the Internet. I've been putting out some of these. I should talk about that, too.
Sure.
It's from a recent program on TV called Project Afterlife. It's very compelling and extremely credible. I put up one of them, two of them already. I'll send them to you. I mean, I think I've sent them to you, but you do get a lot of information, so you can't always notice them. But if you see something that's titled Dean Braxton Died and Lived to Tell, look at it, because you'll see the video that I edited and put up.
I'm writing that down. I can find it on YouTube then or something?
Yeah, it's actually, I emailed it to you. Look in your email.
Oh, okay.
And it's on my Vimeo channel. It's just do a search or a Google search if you want. Go to Vimeo or just Google and just type in Dean Braxton, B-R-A-X-T-O-N. Dean Braxton died and lived to tell.
Okay.
You'll get my video, my Vimeo video.
I was going to say, do you want to give out your Vimeo address so people know where to go? And
yeah, as far as I know, I think it's just under my name, John DiNardo.
John DiNardo.
The last name is D-I capital N-A-R-D-O, D-I-N-A-R-D-O. So you just type that in, and you know, to Google or go to Vimeo, and just type in Vimeo and John DiNardo and type in YouTube and John DiNardo. You'll get some of my other, my YouTube and Vimeo videos that I've put up.
Okay,
that's
great.
All you need to do. Speaking of YouTube, there was one. There's so much prophecy. There's so much. I don't know where to, which way to go.
Well, I'll tell you what.
We
got a break here in just a minute. So why don't we take our break and then we'll come back and yeah, let's get back to things here with my guest John DiNardo. And so yeah, John, we're back. And any direction you'd like to take it would be fine. I was just talking about, you know, having credible folks like an astronaut coming out and talking about it. Now that's my speed right there. That's what I like to see, you know.
Well, that reminds me, Michael, or can you hear me?
Oh yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Okay, that reminds me, I have to look up that astronaut who did an interview with Kerry Cassidy of Project Camelot, and that is on YouTube. So I have to remember to do that tomorrow before I forget and download it to add to my library of documentation on Planet X, because he talks about it.
I learned, John, the older I get, the more I have to have little sticky pads on my desk. So
yeah. Right. We all do. We have so much to learn
and remember
nowadays.
It's just,
we're all inundated with information, political information.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So somebody asked, I don't know if there's another direction you want to go into, but you did ask me to remind you about what it will do to Earth. And I don't know if you wanted to take it from there or someone else asked about the Federal Reserve meeting that's coming up. And another one asked us about the TPP. So there's several areas you can go. I don't know.
Let's put them all in a queue. Okay. One of them, speaking of meetings, about, let's talk about the factual data about the elite going underground right now. This year, 2015, they're going underground. Alex Jones did an emergency report, and I got that on my, I did a YouTube where I took a portion of his emergency report. I believe it was September 5th. And he said, folks, it's an emergency report. They're going underground. The elite are going underground. I don't know why they're going underground. Could be Third World War, which it probably is. Maybe another reason, and they're all building redoubts in New Zealand, going to faraway places, getting out of the country. The people, Israeli billionaires, are leaving Israel. People are fleeing Israel.
I've been saying for several months now that World War III had already, so it might have been even a year already, I've been saying World War III had already started, and people don't believe me. And it's like, you know, these things don't start out with everybody dropping atomic bombs. They start out with little wars here, little wars there, and they build up, and that's what we've seen, right?
Especially now, yes. Especially now, when you have a nuclear war being triggered. The elite are not going to stay on the surface and be killed by a nuclear radioactive fallout. They're going to go into their elaborate trillion-dollar underground cities beneath in the bowels of Cheyenne Mountain and Mount Weather, West Virginia, Cheyenne Mountain, Colorado, and Mount Weather, West Virginia, and then the other countries of the world. They have their own underground cities also. They're interconnected by many miles of underground tunnels that were dug with these underground nuclear generator, from what I understand, nuclear powered underground burrowing machines. that actually create so much heat that they create a glazed walled tunnel, like glass from the rock.
Wow.
And they're able to, in fact, I have the documentation here from Marshall Masters. Again, pardon my reference to Marshall Masters. He's still a friend of mine.
Hey, some of the information he has is great. It's just, yeah. You know, I had an issue with that one pitcher, and he didn't handle it very well with me. I mean, I'm not going to sit and say, you know, anything else bad about him, just that's my experience.
I agree. But it reminded me of his book, Planet X Forecast. And in there, he talks about the underground cities. Yeah, here, I'm glad. It's funny how when you read a particular portion of a book, the book opens up to that page easily because you've had it folded open there so many times. And it just opened up for me. Where is it now here?
That's all right. Take your time. Oh, folks, you can also call in using Skype. Our Skype ID is LNM Radio, and there's no spaces, just LNM Radio.
The manner, reading from his book, the manner of the book Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survival Guide. Incidentally, everybody's prediction is too early. Their predictions are correct, but they're always too early, and it's always later. The event is always later than we expect. Even with Edgar Cayce, his predictions were wonderful. I mean, they were obviously, I know they were from God, because no one could have said the things he said without divine knowledge. But yet he was wrong, and he was too early with his dates. However, the information is still accurate. The same thing with Marshall Masters' book, Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survival Guide. It's now 2015. Quote, the manner of Phil Schneider, man, this guy was brilliant. He was a great geologist. Where's his credentials? They murdered him. They murdered Phil Schneider because he was talking.
Was he the guy that was loaded with cancer, correct? Is that, or have I got that wrong? Probably somebody else.
The one with cancer, that was Dr. Harrington. The cancer side of Dr. Harrington. Just when he was about to reveal his telescopic photographs of Planet X, that he had gone, Dr. Robert S. Harrington, the chief astronomer of the U.S. Naval Observatory, of whom we have just mentioned in the New York Times article from 1983, Dr. Robert S. Harrington, one of the eminent astronomers in the world, went down to one of the U.S. Naval Observatories bases located in Black Birch, Australia. Black Birch, New Zealand. I'm sorry. Black Birch, New Zealand. Because you have to see this object. It's coming in from the southern skies below the foot soles of the feet of planet Earth. That is below the South Pole. That's where this object, Dr. Harrington, detected this object coming in. He did massive amounts of computer calculations throughout the entire vast skies and narrowed down the location of Planet X to a particular small area of the sky. He spent a lot of time doing his computer calculations. So then he went down there, and of course, in 1983, we know that we just read about, the New York Times reported, the infrared astronomical satellite was going out to sight in and photograph what they were confident they would find would be Planet X. So Dr. Harrington, even though 1983 they had already detected it with the infrared astronomical satellite, Dr. Harrington in 1991 went to Black Birch, New Zealand, with an 8-inch telescope. That's not very big, not a very big telescope. So he was confident that this object would be big enough for him to see it. And it must have been an infrared type of telescope, too. So anyway, he went down there and he photographed it. And he said, he put out a report, which is on the Internet. It's a NASA document. Titled "A Search for Planet X," I believe, but don't quote me on that. But you can find it. Just type in Dr. Robert S. Harrington, H-A-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N, and Planet X. And you'll come up with his report. It's on harvard.edu.
Okay.
And he talks about, he says, I'm going down to Black Birch, Australia. This object is where our, is we have no reason to, we have every reason to believe that our calculations are correct, that we know where to look. I'm going to take photographs of this object in New Zealand, and I'm coming back to develop the photographic plates, and I will reveal to the public the findings as to this object and which direction it's moving. And soon after that, he took the pictures in May of 1991, I believe. And in January 1992, he was dead after having cancer for only a couple of weeks. So this is one way they've known this, how to kill people with cancer for a long time.
Yeah.
They murdered Mae Brussel, B-R-U-S-S-E-L-L. She was a wonderful conspiracy researcher. She did many great researches and studies, and I have some of her tapes that she was in California on a broadcast station in California. She was the daughter of a great wealthy department store magnate and department store chain magnate. And she was her whole dedication was truth. They murdered her by putting radioactive material in her food and getting into her home and putting it into her food in a refrigerator. This is how they murdered Mae Brussel. So they've known how to kill people with cancer. It's not a highly technological science.
It's like a virus. I mean, they're able to actually inject cancer cells and give people cancer. And you know, I know we get called conspiracy theorists in some countries. We'd be buried up to our necks for saying that. You know.
Yeah, especially in this country.
That's true.
Right. But they've done it so many times, it's so obvious. They did it to Jack Ruby, the one who was going to testify about the Kennedy assassination. That's how they killed him in prison, Jack Ruby.
Yeah.
That's a famous story. Well, anyway, Phil Schneider, getting back to Phil Schneider now, Dr. Harrington was murdered when he was about to report to the world that he indeed had photographed Planet X. He says, we're going to reveal the plates, the findings of our photographic plates, and they were never revealed. Now, why, even if he died, let's suppose he died of cancer naturally, which he did not. He was murdered. But let's suppose he died naturally. NASA had an obligation to report Dr. Harrington's findings, his photographic pictures, telescopic photographs of Planet X. They never did. Not one word, nothing was ever revealed. That proves they were covering it up right there. There's proof. Secondly, this is documented too. You can find this on the internet. The U.S. Naval Observatory's obituary for Dr. Robert S. Harrington after he was cancer-sided. You know, they talked about what a wonderful man he was and all this. And in the report, they said, now, during his later years, Dr. Harrington just lost interest in Planet X during the last years of his life. He just didn't care about it anymore. Now, there's where they stepped in to expose themselves as liars. Because we know, and so, you know, the evidence is right there in his life that he was intent, the report that I just mentioned to you, where he went down to Black Birch, New Zealand, at the U.S. Naval Observatory, one of their locations in New Zealand, to photograph Planet X. He made this long journey down there. His whole life was dedicated to that. And the documentation of his paper that he issued, published, stating that he was going down there to make these photographs and then reveal the findings. This was a 1991 published document by Dr. Harrington himself. So for these idiots at the U.S. Naval Observatory to write an obituary and offer this lie to the people, to the world, and expose themselves as liars. This was a great blunder. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
I mean, to say, come out, there's no reason for them to, without any prompting, for them to make the statement that Dr. Harrington had lost all interest in Planet X. I guess they were trying to, I could see where their rationale would be to try to quell any suspicion that Dr. Harrington was murdered, because he went to take these photographs of Planet X, and a few months later, after he was supposed to reveal them to the world, they never got revealed, and he died of cancer. Well, of course, there would be suspicion that he was murdered, so they had to try to come up with something to make it look like, no, he wasn't murdered, he just lost interest in Planet X, and he just died of cancer. Well, there was a big blunder, because now we know that they're lying. He did not lose interest in Planet X. Indeed, he was obsessed with Planet X. So there you go. There's solid evidence that Dr. Harrington was murdered, which is solid evidence that Planet X exists and is indeed heading toward our solar system.
All right, John, I've got a couple questions from the chat room I wouldn't mind, and then we'll get right back to what it'll do to Earth and all the other stuff as well. Tomato Picker asks, he says, NASA has stated on November 15th the world will be in a state of darkness for 15 to 30 days. Is he aware of this? And he means you. And I wasn't even aware of this. So.
No, I'm not. I'd like to check that out. NASA said that on November 15th, we are going to be in a period of darkness.
That's what this person in the chat room is telling me.
An eclipse, maybe?
We
should look that up.
Yeah, well, you know, Tomato Picker, if you could share a link or anything like that, that would be helpful. And then I'll pass it on to John.
Yeah, I mean, it's very possible that they said something like that, because that... Here's an instance where somebody's question triggers memories that are relevant to also to the issue of Planet X. And that is that you probably recall, this is a famous news report going back to May of 2014, May of last year, where the foreign minister of the nation of France stated publicly alongside John Kerry that in 500 days, Earth will experience total climate chaos. Those are his words, total climate chaos. This was in May of 2014, and in September, those 500 days that he stated have elapsed. So now we're in a period of total climate chaos, according to the foreign minister of France.
Oh, we are. We do. There is some major stuff going on. I mean, look. I mean, we're in South Carolina. It's way too soon for us to get a frost. We're getting a frost, we've got advisories out for that. Then the middle of the country that should be freezing cold right now, I guess, are getting there. They're hitting 70s and 80s, and
yeah, have record heat in the Midwest. It's just crazy, and it's all because of that jet stream that's shaped like a roller coaster, which it should not be like a roller coaster. It should be more like a horizontal bed or a highway, something rather smooth that approximates the Canadian-U.S. border. That's the shape of the normal jet stream going back decades ago, back in the 1980s, with you saw the National Weather Service maps, and I'm sure you can get copies of those archives from the National Weather Service, where you see the map of the U.S. with the jet stream front. Every day after day, you'll see that it's relatively approximated the border of the U.S. and Canada. Well, that's how smooth it was. Now it's like a roller coaster.
Well, people better get this stuff now. That's like going back and getting old pictures of maybe what the sky looked like with clouds and stuff. And you get those now because I have a feeling they're going to start knocking that stuff out because they don't want you to be able to go back and compare. I mean, I go back and I look at old pictures and I don't see the chemtrails. And people say, oh, well, that's because there's more plane traffic now. Baloney. Don't try that with me. I mean, but
yeah,
John,
because we know that chemtrails, that contrails are just normal condensation, and they disappear in a few seconds.
That's right. These things aren't going anywhere. As a matter of fact, after a few hours, they're covering the entire sky. And I can't believe. I mean, how brainwashed are people that they could walk around, do their daily activities, and that then they never notice? I mean, they're looking at their smartphones, of course. That's probably why. But another question here, John. John asks, Michael, can you ask your guest if he believes Venus is a relatively new planet in our solar system, as it is the, he says, it's the only planet that spins in the opposite direction. Some also believe it was a Planet X-type object that removed the oceans from Mars that rained down that ocean on Earth for 40 days and 40 nights. What do you think of that?
Yeah, James McCanny talks about that often and says exactly that. In the past, he stated that. And he got that from the great, brilliant man, scholar, Dr. Emanuel Velikovsky. Now, Velikovsky was essentially correct about this object, Venus. Not where he believed it came out of Jupiter, but that's probably wrong. But he was correct in stating that Venus is a relatively new planet. And we know now from our Planet X research that this object came in around when? It came in around the time of the Exodus of the Israelites. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Now, it could have been there are several Planet X incursions. And as I should have mentioned earlier, Planet X comes in every 36 and a half centuries. So try to remember that number, 36 and a half century orbital period. And if you look back 36 and a half centuries ago, you'll see that there was the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt. And I'm not sure if that's when it was really this Planet X object, Planet X companion, a smaller companion, which turned out to be Venus. Yeah, it was. It was at that time. It was the last incursion, the last orbital incursion, 36 and a half centuries ago. The Israelites were fleeing from Egypt, and God ordained all of these natural disasters to jolt the Egyptian Empire and the great Pharaoh from to break their grip on the Israelites, the bondage of the Israelites as their slaves, and allow them to escape. Now, that not only is documented very well in the Bible, the book of Exodus, but it's also documented in the Ipuwer papyrus. Ipuwer is Ipuwer. He was a man, an Egyptian, who survived in that same period and same area of Egypt during the great plagues of Egypt that are described in the book of Exodus. And they said that, there was the destroyer passed over. Now, God stated to Moses in the book of Exodus that I will bring the destroyer to pass over and kill all the firstborn of Egypt and those who stay in their houses, and to put the blood in the form of a cross, take the blood of the lamb and put it in the form of a cross, essentially, on their doorposts. Mm-hmm. Well, it was really a winged globe at the time. Other societies, civilizations, in their ancient records have been found to have recorded a winged globe that came in. And this is just plasma, electrified plasma that drenches the incoming body as it passes in through the outer heliosphere surrounding that heliospheric plasma, that's electrified particles, plasma surrounding our atmosphere. As it comes in, it electrically sticky plasma engulfs and attaches to the incoming body. Now the incoming body becomes like a swarm, a glowing object, and that's what the ancient civilizations recorded in their documents that were discovered, have been discovered by archaeologists in the Middle East, for example, and even in the Americas, the Mexican civilization, the Incas, the Aztecs, etc. They all described what they saw. It was a winged, glowing winged globe. And that's the plasma interaction. His body is engulfed in plasma. It's being drawn in toward the sun. And the sun is surrounded by a space charge of electrons. And now you have, what you have is a flirtation, an electrical flirtation between the sun and the incoming plasma-drenched body. The plasma surrounding the incoming body is electrically positive in charge. The electrons surrounding the sun are electrically negative in charge. And as we have all learned in our science classes, negative and positive charges attract one another. And that's exactly what happened. The plasma began to be pulled toward the sun, and there was a discharge, a very powerful electrical discharge between the incoming object and the sun. But before it reached the sun, before that electrical discharge occurred, there was solar winds were becoming, the sun was becoming excited, and it was blowing, excited by this incoming electrical body. It was like a basically a celestial sexual attraction, you might say, electrically sexual attraction between the sun and the object. And the sun, therefore, consequently started blowing out powerful waves of electrified particles, plasma, most of which are protons, the same charge as that which engulfed the incoming body. Now, these protons interacted with the protons and caused a repulsion force around the incoming plasma-drenched body, protons repelling protons, and it created an outstretching, laterally spreading wings of plasma. And that's what the ancients saw. The ancient historians recorded seeing a winged globe, a glowing winged globe. And when the object gets close enough to Earth, it begins to discharge some of that plasma down directly. So now you have the outstretched, glowing plasma arms of the winged globe, and now it begins to discharge vertically, and it forms a cross. Uh-huh. And this is the cross that the Lord Jesus prophesied you would see in the sky. He says it in the book of Matthew, Matthew 24, and in the New Testament, throughout the New Testament, he says, you will see the sign of the Son of Man. He calls, the Lord Jesus called himself the Son of Man. You'll see the sign of the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. And what is the sign of Jesus? Well, we all know it's a cross. So you're going to see a glowing cross in the sky as a result of this incoming body. Now, to answer the question, back around 36 and a half centuries ago, it was most likely the companion, a smaller companion body to this Planet X, which came in and molested planets in our inner solar system, such as Mars. I believe McCanny says that, and Velikovsky, before him, originated that idea by saying that, yes, indeed, the gravitational pull of this incoming body, which later became Venus, this gravitational pull sucked the atmosphere off of Mars. It pulled all the atmosphere off of Mars, and it pulled in so much water. Well, this is going back to another incursion, which would be the great flood of Noah's day. But great inundations of water came in a previous Planet X incursion,
yeah,
36 and a half centuries prior to 1650 BC.
Not to interrupt, John, but I've had guys like Michael Cremo on, and who has told me that there's been at least six that they can see so far. And of course, once they keep digging, they'll probably find more. But six cataclysms on this planet that would have been life, you know, altering or life ending, like the flood and things like that.
I believe it, definitely. You know, you go back, and again, we've got pretty good scientific information. Not for me. I think I'm about the only one who has really done a chronological indexing and put all the chronological index marks together that have been proven by science to show that this object comes in every 36 and a half centuries. Now, many people like such as Nancy Leader, Mark Hazelwood before me, did indicate that this object came in 36 and a half centuries ago and caused what I had just described, the great plagues of Egypt. And of course, it was Velikovsky and later McCanny state it was the object, the comet, which became Venus, that caused the Earth's destruction. But the primary cause of Venus being pulled in, or this object that became Venus, was Planet X, because Planet X is like a gravitational vacuum cleaner. It pulls in all kinds of objects and holds them in its gravitational grip as it comes in from deep space. So that's one of the comets that it pulled in, and yes, it sure looks like that comet then went into orbit around the sun and became Venus. So Venus is probably a fairly new planet, about 36 and a half centuries old. Going back now, time indexing is very crucial to proving that Planet X exists and comes in every 36 and a half centuries. For example, let's take the very most recent Planet X incursion, 36 and a half centuries ago. That was around 1650 BC or 1630 BC. That is proven that there was Earth disasters that occurred back then. And the reason we know is that tree rings, if you can go to Wikipedia and look up, tree rings were severely narrowed back around 1630 BC, plus or minus 10 years. Now, tree ring dating is very accurate because you have count the tree rings on the petrified trees that our archaeologists discover. And you can pretty accurately, because each tree ring represents 1 year.
Yeah.
You can pretty accurately date the time when the tree rings became very narrowed, obviously because of volcanic explosions occurring around the world. And volcanic explosions occur when the Earth's core, Earth's molten outer core and solid metal inner core, becomes so hot that you have mantle plumes arising from the Earth's molten outer core. The core is below the mantle. The mantle comprises most of the Earth's mass, you know, above, outside, and surrounding the molten metal core, outer core of the Earth. And surrounding it is the mantle, which is molten rock and metals and all kinds of other elements. So the mantle begins, or the hot molten core gets so hot, and here's another, there's so many variables that I'd like to talk about, so I have to touch on them because I don't have enough time. See, my theory is in that nobody's talking about this. I'm the only one who has this theory that I know of, and I've been trying to present it to scientists through email. And the theory is this, that Earth's solid metal inner core, which floats, rotates at the center of the Earth, within a body, a cavity of molten metal, which is called a molten outer core, that solid metal inner core within the body of molten metal has been pushed off center. How has it been pushed off center? By chronic solar blasting, hyperactive solar activity, which strikes the Earth's magnetic field. And when these solar winds, which are comprised of electrical particles at electrical particles in motion. Any physicist knows that electrical particles in motion, like electrons and protons, when they're traveling in a straight line, they create electromagnetic fields surrounding them, such as sort of like the threads on a screw. And you turn a screw and the screw goes in a linear direction into the wood, but the threads now of the screw are appear to be rotating around the linear line of the screw. So the screw threads are sort of analogous to the magnetic field that's generated coaxially around the electrical particles that are traveling in straight line streams from the sun to the earth. And those electrical particles hit the Earth's magnetic field, and their streams, electromagnetically generated fields, interact with Earth's magnetic field and cause a clashing, a diminution, a diminishing of the Earth's field, because interacting magnetic fields add to and subtract from one another and cause a compromise or diminishing of both when they clash. You can see that. So as a result, this electromagnetic energy generated by the streaming electrons and protons from the sun feeds back into the earth, just like an electrical transformer. I mean, I was in electronics for many years, and we know that electromagnetic fields from one winding of a transformer couple back to the adjacent winding of that transformer, even though there's no physical contact, and it feeds into the transformer, and one winding will cause a heating of the other winding. So that's what happens to the planet Earth when these electromagnetic fields from the generated by the sun's solar blasting clash with Earth's magnetic field, feeds back into the core of the Earth, because the Earth's magnetic field loops from the center of the Earth all the way around the Earth and outside the Earth, like the skin of an apple might loop around the apple. And now the Earth's core is getting very hot, and electromagnetic fields are feedback is causing the Earth's center solid metal inner core to be pushed laterally off of its center point. And now Earth's solid metal inner core is beginning to revolve where it never revolved before. It was only rotating at the center point. Now it's revolving and rotating, causing a mixing action, sort of like you're stirring a cup of coffee. If you put the stirrer right in the center of the coffee cup and you put the stirrer between the palms of your hand and rotate the stirrer, there's not much disturbance of that coffee, right? It's pretty much level and smooth, and is only like a circular motion because you're only rotating the stirrer in the center of the cup. But you take that stirrer and start moving it around, rotating it, revolving it around inside the cup and toward the outer edges of the cup, you're going to cause turbulence and a wave action in that coffee. That's exactly what's happening to the Earth's molten outer core as a result of our Earth's inner core being laterally displaced from its center point, shifted off of center by these magnetic interactions from the sun feeding back to the Earth's core. That's my theory. Nobody else has ever presented that to my knowledge. And what's going to happen now? The Earth's solid metal core is rolling around like a ball inside of a paint spray can. Do you ever shake a paint spray can? That little plastic ball is rattling around in there?
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's causing turbulence inside of Earth's molten metal core. As a result, you're causing heat friction. Earth's molten core is getting so hot that it's heating up the mantle. Okay, now the mantle is surrounding Earth's molten core like a big glob of pudding. Consider it as chocolate pudding, more or less, surrounding and engulfing the entire molten iron outer core. And that mantle now, what's happening is a lava lamp. Lava lamps are being produced. You've seen a lava lamp? Lava sits at the bottom of the lamp. And when you turn on the light, the heat, what a perfect analogy, the heat from the light bulb gradually warms up the lava until it rises upward and plumes in long columns. And that's exactly what's happening to Earth. That's how volcanic eruptions occur on the surface. Mantle plumes are rising upward from the heating of the core. Why is the core being heated? Because the sun is chronically blasting out solar energy over a long period of time and feeding it back into Earth's core, constantly pushing on Earth's core, pushing it laterally off center. Now it's really heating up. Not only the magnetic energy from the sun is heating up the Earth, because magnets, I mean, you take a magnet, electromagnetic field, and you put it, if it's strong magnetic field, you can make a piece of metal so hot that you can't even touch it. That's what a magnetic field will do to heat up metal. So imagine the magnetic energy being impinged upon our Earth's magnetic field, feeding back into Earth's core through our Earth's magnetic field, causing it core to heat up. So you have all this, and they're proving it now. Everything I've been talking about for the last 10 years is now being proved by science. They're saying, we don't know why. Why is the Earth's core, metal core, heating up? And why? And we're getting so many lava plumes coming up. They're called, they're actually called mantle plumes or thermal plumes. And they're rising up through the mantle and causing volcanic eruptions in the oceans. Volcanic eruptions are increasing greatly, and also on land. And as a result, earthquakes always accompany volcanic eruptions, because you're just, it's common sense. I mean, it's when you have molten material pushing up through the Earth's crust, it's going to break up the crust as well as emerge through volcanic openings.
Oh, I know that all too well. Just water pouring through here from the torrential rains we got here in South Carolina took up roads, and I mean deep, just like huge chunks missing, like somebody hit it with a bomb, a missile or something. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. So if water can do that, lava's even thicker. So I could imagine what it can do.
And it has so much heat energy too.
Yeah.
That's what makes it so powerful, as it pushes up through Earth's crust, and we're getting more of that. But getting back to, I think I answered the question about Venus being a new planet. And, okay, now, the time indexing I was talking about before, 36 and a half centuries ago, we know absolutely from tree ring count dating, and also from the great archaeologically discovered explosion of the Santorini volcanic caldera on the island of Thera in the Aegean Sea, which occurred around that same time, around 1650 BC, agreeing with the dating of the tree rings, where the dating of the tree rings showed that the tree rings worldwide were narrowed. Worldwide, I mean, you can go to Wikipedia and find this out. Tree rings in Britain, in the British Isles, tree rings in the Americas were all narrowed around 36 and a half centuries ago. So there you go. And so the Santorini explosion of the volcano, of that caldera, and many other volcanic explosions occurred around that time, 36 and a half centuries ago. Now, that was one Planet X orbit ago. Another previous Planet X orbit ago, let's say, was another 36 and a half centuries ago. If you do the arithmetic and go back from 1650 BC, where the last incursion occurred, and go back another 36 and a half centuries ago, you wind up on 5300 BC, 5300 BC. There are two famous geologists named Pittman and Ryan, P-I-T-M-A-N-N, I believe, and Ryan. You can look them up, those two names. If you just type those two names, Pittman and Ryan, R-Y-A-N, into Google, you'll come up with their discovery of Black Sea Research, when they did the Black Sea Research and found out that that Black Sea was dumped out, became overfilled and flooded vast areas of the area around Turkey, I believe it was. They have done research and dated that Black Sea deluge to around 5300 BC, which they say was the time of the great flood of Noah's day. Well, again, at that time, the incursion of Planet X caused this great flood. It said in the Bible, in the book of Genesis, that the oceans of the deep opened up, the fountains of the deep opened up. Now, we found from the Science Channel, I wanted to broadcast a few years ago, they claim, and others reports from scientists have also verified, that there is at least 3 to 10 times as much water beneath the Earth's crust, beneath the oceans, beneath the crust of the oceans, at least 3 to 10 times as much water beneath the crust of the Earth as there is on the entire Earth itself, including all the oceans and all the rivers and all the lakes. So when this object came by, its gravitational and magnetic forces pulled on the crust and caused it to break open. And according to the Bible, it's correct, scientifically correct. The ocean, fountains of the deep opened up and flooded the entire Earth. Now, you probably also had water coming from space, too, because these objects pull in water from, well, from other planets or from, as they come in, they suck the atmosphere off of other planets and deliver it to Earth as the Earth gravitationally attracts some of these comets. But this was the big flood of Noah's day. So there we've got two indexing points, 1650 BC and 1650 BC, the scientifically shown date of the great plagues of Exodus, the book of Exodus, which were also reported by Indians in the American continent, in the Incas, the Aztecs, etc. They reported the same kind of disasters where, you know, great floods occurred and there was a 3 days of darkness where the earth stood still in its rotation because this passing massive object actually counteracted the force of the sun and the rotational force momentum of the earth and slowed the earth down to a stop, to a point where it stopped. And of course, like a top, when it stops, it topples over. So earth actually underwent a partial pole shift at that time. Okay, 1650 BC, go back another 36 and a half centuries ago, we just showed Pittman and Ryan's Black Sea experiments or studies showed that the Great Flood occurred then. Now let's go back another 36 and a half centuries. That is a third Planet X orbit ago. From 5300 BC, we land on around 9000 BC, which was the time some of the best archaeologists tell us and ancient historians tell us that the great sinking of Atlantis occurred. And that was a major, I mean, we have vast amounts of civilizations that have been discovered under the sea. In fact, I have in front of me Edgar Cayce, the great book, Edgar Cayce on Atlantis. Edgar Cayce, I won't go into detail, I don't think we have all the time, but he was a proven psychic. He was able to heal, and that was well documented, dramatized in the Ancient Prophecies documentary from ABC TV, which I mentioned earlier, where it talked about Edgar Cayce and his life as a child. He became a healer. He would go into a trance and heal people. He had no knowledge of what he was saying. He was asleep, but he would utter things, words, and instructions that would heal people. In fact, he was so successful, his son, Hugh Lynn Cayce, is in this documentary saying, "My dad, they had truckloads of mail coming to the house. People were dying. The doctors could not heal them. They were begging Edgar Cayce to give a reading, to go into a trance and give a reading to tell how, to describe how to heal their loved one." Are you still there, Michael?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay.
We got a break coming up in about 3 minutes. So
okay, Edgar Casey, so we documented, I mean, many cases are shown wonderfully and dramatically in this Ancient Prophecies documentary, how Edgar Casey healed a woman who had a bite from a brown recluse spider. Those are very nasty, poisonous spiders.
Oh, they are.
You could lose your leg from one of those.
I know somebody who was bit by one at a seminary I worked at one point. And, she was in bad shape for a while. Skin was turning black and blah.
If you ever get a spider bite or anything like that, try creosote. See, oil of smoke is what Edgar Casey recommended in his trance when he was unconsciously speaking, how to heal this woman. He actually said in the trance, they read a letter, they said, Laura has a sore on her leg, it's terribly festered. All he knew was he was hearing his letter from Laura, whom he had never met before, in a faraway place where he had never been before. And he was in a trance, and he said, ah, yes, we have the body. We're going through we're going through State Street now. We're going past this Wacker Street, and now we see the house. It's a greenhouse. We're going into the house. He's in a trance now. He doesn't know what he's saying. We're going into the house. Something is on the stove. Something's cooking on the stove. We're going upstairs to a bedroom, an attic bedroom. Ah, yes, we have the body. We're going through the heart. We're going through the lungs. We're going through the arterial system. Ah, well, we have the wound. It's her leg has been bitten by a tiny brown spider while she was sleeping. Here's what to cure the woman. Give her, apply oil of smoke, will heal her wound. Oil of smoke, Bancroft Pharmacy, Chicago, top shelf. He would say all this in a trance. It was just amazing.
Yeah.
It could only have come from God.
Well, yeah, he's definitely connecting somewhere and getting this information. It certainly is not demonic. I mean, it's helping people, so that's a plus.
And you know, demons don't help people. They hurt people.
That's right.
God loves and cares about people. So Edgar Casey was a prophet of God. And he said, Bancroft Pharmacy, top shelf, in his sleep. And they called Bancroft Pharmacy, and the pharmacist said, no, we don't have any more of that. I'm looking on the shelf. It's not there. This company went bankrupt around 1910. We don't have their product anymore. So they did another reading, and they told Casey that the pharmacist had said, it's not there. And he said, yes, it is. It's behind the blue bottle. So they called the Bancroft Pharmacy, and he looked behind the blue bottle. He said, oh, yeah, there's just where you said it is. It's there. We're sending it right away. We're mailing it to you. Now, I later read that oil smoke is actually creosote, which is a toxic substance that is applied to wood to keep it from rotting, like telephone poles.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put that on a spider bite, you'll kill the infection. And you know what I found is to be for spider bites? I was bitten by a spider and also poison ivy. Incidentally, this cures poison ivy, and nobody I know of knows of any cure of poison ivy except to suffer.
Oh, well, that's horrible.
Oil of oregano, pure oil of oregano. It burns a little bit. You put it on, a few drops will cover the area, and then apply it again, and in a few hours, the poison ivy is gone. I mean, wow. It worked for me. But oil of soap, smoke, creosote is what, you can't find oil of smoke, but creosote is what it is. And also oil of oregano, put that on a spider bite, and that could save you from from losing a limb. Okay, getting back to, so anyway, we proved that Edgar Casey has this psychic power. In his sleep, he said things like, I'm reading from the book compiled by his son, Hugh Lynn Casey. Edgar Casey on Atlantis, and we don't have time to get into Atlantis. 9,000 BC, nobody knows anything about Atlantis. But according to Edgar Casey's readings from God, and he couldn't make up, there's no way he could have made this up. He was in a trance. He said they had power plants that were so fabulous. It was like a huge building. And it was, they used these crystal, a huge crystal where energy, either light energy or electromagnetic energy, was projected through the top of the building, sort of like it looked like an observatory, an astronomical observatory. It had a huge dome that opened up, and it would project this energy. And a lot of people think nowadays that fallen angels fallen angels may be brought in through portals as a result of some of these pyramids with the projecting crystals, using crystals or whatever in the pyramids. Who knows what the elite are doing? I don't know whether that's related or not to Edgar Cayce. But Edgar Cayce said that back in the days of Atlantis, before Atlantis sunk beneath the sea, they were actually projecting this powerful energy through the air, not using telephone lines like we use today, but they were powering cars and boats and airplanes with this energy produced in these power plants, radiated through crystals, large crystals, but that's an incidental point to the sinking of Atlantis. What he talks about in the end of the book and some of his readings, on page 158, as I recall, I'm going to read to you. These are some of the things Edgar Cayce said in the trance, in addition to the healing. We have a break?
Yeah, we got to take our break, John, so hold on right there, and then we'll pick back up on Cayce, because I have a question from the chat to throw at you about Cayce as well, and that's whether you thought he was a prophet or not. We'll get to that when we come back. John DiNardo is my guest, folks. We're back. And so it was Edgar Cayce a prophet before you read that?
Oh, yes. He was a well-known and prophet. His name was typically, they called him the sleeping prophet. His thousands, literally thousands of superhuman predictions that healed people beyond the knowledge of anything that modern medicine could do. His thousands of readings in a trance-like state that healed people who were unable to be healed by the doctors of the day, proved that Edgar Cayce had supernatural information coming to him while he was in a trance. He was one of the greatest prophets in history. So we've established that his credibility as a prophet. Now, to carry that further, to establish the credibility of these statements that I'm going to read to you about earth changes, I'll read them to you now from the book Edgar Cayce on Atlantis. Here are the readings that he made in a trance. One of them, this one comes from 1934, quote, "As to the changes, physical," again, his speech is very stilted and convoluted because he's in a trance. "As to the changes, physical," again, "the earth will be broken up in the western portion of America. The greater portion of Japan must go into the sea. The upper portion of Europe will be changed as in the twinkling of an eye. Land will appear off the east coast of America." That could be off South Carolina, off of New Jersey, who knows. "There will be upheavals in the Arctic and in the Antarctic that will make for the eruption of volcanoes in the torrid areas. And there will be the shifting then of the poles, so that where there have been those of a frigid or semi-tropical will become the more tropical, and moss and fern will grow. And these will begin in those periods in 58 and to 98. Again, he was way too early with his predictions, but I believe that the predictions are going to come true. "These will begin when there will be proclaimed as the periods when His light," that's with a capital H, "when God's light will be seen again in the clouds." Okay. And remember, we referred to Jesus saying that he would come in the clouds with the sign of the Son of Man, and that would be, and I told you that from Planet X, information that that would be a glowing cross in the sky. Well, Edgar Cayce is saying the same thing in a trance. He would come in the scene in the clouds.
Yeah.
Light will be seen in the clouds.
I'm wondering, do you know of anything that Cayce may have been wrong about? Now, I have not heard about anything like that. I've heard nothing but good things, but I don't know if...
No, I don't. The only thing is the dates. Old prophets seem to be way too early with their dates.
Sure.
But I'll continue reading, though. Now, the people who, his wife and his secretary, would write down, take down everything he said and record it all. Question from one of his wife was, how soon will these changes in the Earth's activity begin to be apparent? Now, this is important for us because we've seen tremendous convulsions and trauma occurring in planet Earth in terms of weather and earthquakes over the past 10 years. We know that. The floods in South Carolina almost floated South Carolina away into the ocean. But can we say that these signs are now becoming apparent? Changes in the Earth's activity, well, we don't know. I think they're becoming apparent with all the horrible weather we've been having and the floods and the et cetera. But let's try to determine when he's talking about. His answer is when the changes in the Earth's activity will become apparent. His answer is, quote, when there is the first breaking up of some conditions in the South Sea, that's the South Pacific, breaking up in the South Sea, and those as apparent in the sinking or arising of that which is almost opposite to it, or in the Mediterranean and the Mount Etna area, then we may know it has begun. Well, we haven't seen that yet. Now, we've seen a lot of earthquakes in the South Pacific, and I haven't done enough geological studies to find out if we've seen such overall South Sea geologic activity to constitute the change, the beginning of the change that Cayce is talking about. However, Mount Etna in Italy, I don't believe it has been erupting a little bit, but nothing that serious. So he's saying it's going to be, when you see the coincidence of South Sea geologic activity or undersea earthquakes and volcanoes, and on the opposite side of the Earth, if you take a look at a globe of the Earth, on the opposite side, it should be around the Mediterranean, around Italy. At the same time, you'll see activity with Mount Etna. And I have to check on that. Lately, I know it's been kind of hot, heating up and smoldering, but I have to check to see if there's been any serious eruptions in Mount Etna. Continuing on, question, will there be any physical changes in the Earth's surface in North America? If so, what sections will be affected and how? Answer from Edgar Cayce in a trance. All over the country, we will find many physical changes of a minor or greater degree. The greater change, as we will find in America, will be the North Atlantic seaboard. Watch New York. That was from 1932 when he was in a trance.
Watch New York, huh?
Watch New York. Quote, another one. Quote from Edgar Cayce in a trance. As to, this is from, let's see, I'll give you the year here. As to conditions in the geography of the world, of the country, changes here are gradually coming about. Many portions of the East Coast will be disturbed, as well as many portions of the West Coast, as well as the central portion of the United States. Well, we know we've got the massive New Madrid earthquake fault in the Midwest, which is, shows sign of rumbling. That is tremendous. And we know we got the Cascadia subduction zone off the coast of Washington State and Oregon in the Pacific Ocean, which is ready to go. The scientists are all warning about that. And we've got the San Andreas fault in California, which is, I've got reports saying the big one is overdue. Okay, so Many portions of the East Coast will be disturbed, as well as many portions of the West Coast, as well as the central portion of the United States. In the next few years, lands will appear in the Atlantic as well as in the Pacific. Wow. Land is going to rise up out of the ocean.
Do we know if that would mean artificial lands or?
No, real undersea, the seafloor will be bulged up. And again, it's all basic, very understandable and common sense from a geological point of view, that when you have the heating up of the Earth's molten core causing these lava lamp-like mantle plumes to erupt and puncture the underside of the Earth's crust and cause volcanic eruptions and earthquakes, you're going to get this kind of activity, this land rising. In fact, off the Canary Islands on the west coast of Africa, the Canary Island chain, there have been islands rising up already over the last few years. And we have news reports that I've been following about land rising up, little volcanic islands pushing up from the ocean and appearing above the waterline.
And that's always happening, though. Isn't there always like islands coming up, in certain spots and then disappearing over time, of course, but...
These happen relatively quick.
Well, they did, that's why...
Canary Islands. And when you say always, like, if it was 10 years ago, that's still considered in the current time frame.
Yeah, right.
But if you say, well, we've had islands rising up, say, back around the 1930s and the 1940s, I don't know, I haven't studied that. But I think there's more of that activity right now. Again, the Earth's core is heating up, and the scientists are reporting on the Earth's outer core, molten outer core, really getting hot, and so a lot of mantle plumes are starting to come up now. So it's getting to be a great concern among geophysicists today, right, as we speak.
Well, it's a concern for radio hosts, too.
Yeah, because you're in South Carolina. Charleston is a big earthquake-prone area, very dangerous.
Oh, I know, and it's way overdue.
Yeah. Well, what we ought to do is keep our eye on this kind of activity. And you can't sell your house in a day or two, and you wouldn't want to try. But you can take a two-day vacation if you see the activity getting really bad. And just follow it very closely and just take off, go someplace, head west, and get a motel room or take a little three-day vacation. Nothing happens. You just come back again, and you might wind up taking a few trips, but you could save your life.
Well,
may not save your house.
You know what I'm thinking, John, is with all this flood water, boy, it's a good trigger, isn't it?
It is. I've read about that, too, where lots of flood water causes such pressure on the Earth's crust that it actually can precipitate earthquakes.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that's why I'm thinking, whether it was intentional or not, we know that water certainly in earthquakes, they kind of do mix.
That's right, yes, absolutely. That's another triggering factor is, as you say, the heavy deluge of water pressing down on the Earth's crust. Many portions of the East Coast will be disturbed, as well as many portions of the West Coast, as well as the central portion of the United States. In the next few years, lands will appear in the Atlantic as well as in the Pacific. And what is the coastline now of many a land will be the bed of the ocean. Wow. Even many of the battlefields of the present, that was 1941 when he was speaking, many of battlefields of the present will be ocean, will be the seas, the bays, the lands over which the new order, he called it the new order, the lands over which the new order will carry on their trade as one with another. You see, he even prophesied a new world order when he was in a trance.
I see.
Portions of the now east coast of New York, or New York City itself, will in the main disappear. New York City will disappear. This will be another generation, though, here. While the southern portions of Carolina, Georgia, these will disappear. And sooner, sooner than New York.
And this is all happening. Georgia. And this is all happening, and this was all predicted by Casey.
Casey in his trance in 1940s, 1930s. Yep.
Wow.
Continuing, the waters of the lakes, the Great Lakes, will empty into the Gulf of Mexico. Imagine the Great Lakes emptying into the Gulf of Mexico, rather than the waterway over which such discussions have been recently made. He's referring to, in other words, he's saying the Great Lakes will empty into the Gulf of Mexico rather than emptying into the St. Lawrence Seaway as they do now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not a good thing.
In other words, the Earth will, the U.S. will probably split open along the Mississippi, and the Mississippi will widen tremendously.
That's what Dr. Rand has said, that's what's going to go down. And we could take a few extra minutes, John, if you got more you want to get through, because I want to hear it.
Okay, continuing. Then the area where the entity, now he talked about entities and you know, his trance, he used stilted language. Then the area where the entity that's talking about himself is now located, which is, Virginia, they say parenthetically, in Virginia Beach, where he lived. Then the area where himself, the entity, is now located will be among the safety lands. I don't know, Virginia Beach, I wouldn't want to be out there. It's too close to the coast for me. They got hit pretty hard with the last flood, the last rainstorm. But he may be right. They will be among the safety lands, as will be portions of what is now Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois, and much of the southern portion of Canada. And the eastern portion of Canada, those will all be what he prophesied as being the safe lands.
What about Buffalo, New York? I guess that's gone.
Well, he says the eastern portion of Canada, that's pretty close to Buffalo. So sounds like that area may be safe, according to Casey's prophecies.
Oh, good.
And he says much of the southern portion of Canada, okay, that's southern Canada, and the eastern portion, so southeast Canada will be pretty safe. That's Buffalo, basically. While he says, however, the western land, much of Canada, much of that is to be disturbed in this land, Canada, as well as much in other lands, too, will be disturbed. So western Canada is going to be disturbed. Continuing, the earth will be broken up in many places. The early portion will see a change in the physical aspect of the west coast of America. So in other words, the first signs, he's saying, of the breakup of the U.S. will be in the west coast. And then it looks like then the next breakup will be the Carolinas and Georgia. And then after that, New York.
Oh, so someone just asked me about Rochester, New York, which is about, I guess, somewhere around 4 to 5 hours from New York City. So probably, and it's, you know, the lake, got lake all around it, so probably an ocean on the other side, really, when you think of New York City, so probably not so safe, huh?
I don't know. It's Rochester is up there, though. It's getting close to Canada, so he says
true.
It's going to be eastern, southeastern Canada, he says, is going to be safe, but...
Well, it's an hour from Buffalo, so maybe parts of Rochester will be safe. I'm sure that there's parts of Buffalo that'll get whacked, too, because of Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
So,
well, best thing to do is just check out the like the areas of eastern Canada, southeastern Canada, and the areas of the U.S. contiguous to southeastern Canada, which would be New England, you know, upper New England.
And those in power are probably aware of this. That's why they're doing so much to. It seems like to split up the countries and do what they can to cause chaos while they're going to get ready to go underground. Maybe.
Well, that's what they have to create a diversion. They have to break up the nation states. So
World
they can
War
have
III.
One world order before all this happens, and they can go underground and go.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh no. You're
okay.
Yep.
Continuing on, let's see. So the earth will be broken up in many places. The early portion will see a change in the physical aspect of the west coast of America. There will be open waters in the northern portion of Greenland. There will be new lands seen off the Caribbean Sea, and dry land will appear. South America shall be shaken from the uppermost portion to its end. And in the Antarctic, off Tierra del Fuego, land and a strait with rushing waters. So these are things that happen, or it's all common sense. It's all basic physics.
Where can people find these? I'm sure there's probably a website that people can go to and actually see these prophecies of his. Because I'll tell you what, I kind of take what he does serious, because I have seen his track record, and it's pretty damn good.
Okay. Oh, it's fabulous. I mean, the only thing he was wrong about was the dates.
Well, yeah.
What you can do is go to your search engine and type in Edgar Cayce, C-A-Y-C-E. Type in Association for Research and Enlightenment. Just remember, A-R-E, Association for Research and Enlightenment. You should get all kinds of information that way.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, Revelations, there's so many side things I want to tie together. The little girls in Garibaldi, not only were they told by the angel, these ignorant little girls who knew nothing about science or anything, they were told by the angel that there would come a great heat and people would kill each other. And now my surmisal is that because of the great thirst, which we read about, causing the oceans being swallowed up by the land and the seas will boil. This was an ancient prophecy in the Colburn Bible. Because of that, there'll be a great thirst, that people will drink each other's blood for lack of water. It's horrifying to think about it. And God prophesied this for those who, he says, if people continue to disregard their Creator, this is one of the things he's going to do, that people would be eating one another alive. So turn to God in your mind. Keep God's presence in your mind, in your heart, and feel his presence, and his mind will speak to your mind and guide you. This is what I try to do. The little girls in Garibaldi, the second thing that was told to them, which is absolutely phenomenal, they knew nothing about science. However, they were told that at one point in the future, when these disasters occur, this called God's chastisement, no electric motor will be able to operate anywhere on Earth. Now, I immediately knew what that was caused by. When Earth Planet X comes by, it's like a big brown dwarf star. It's like a super big Jupiter. It has a huge, great magnetic field that it generates. As it passes by, it's passing, expanding, billowing magnetic field from millions of miles away as it passes Earth. Will sweep, that magnetic field from Planet X will sweep and engulf planet Earth like a ghost passing through a wall. And that magnetic field will cancel out and overcome and neutralize every other magnetic field that's generated on Earth, such as the magnetic fields that are necessarily generated in electric motors in order to make a motor operate. It generates electromagnetic fields, mm-hmm. which those fields rotate the motor, actually. So no motor will operate because Earth will be swept by and engulfed like a ghost passing through a wall by Planet X's powerful electromagnetic field. So this is phenomenal to think about. These ignorant girls knew nothing about science, and yet they were given this prophecy. So we know the girls were spoken to, given prophecy by God. You see, God has been warning people around the world. God warned us through Edgar Cayce. God warned us through the girls at Garibaldi. And God warned us through the girls at Fatima, three little girls, children, the two girls and a boy at Fatima, Portugal in 1917. The Pope of the Catholic Church actually, this I have information from Catholic Scholar, who's been doing research, and others who have researched the sister Lucia, who was one of the children. She gave the third secret of prophecy, which was concealed by the church, and it was accidentally released by word of mouth through Pope John Paul II. I have the document in front of me. I'll tell you from memory because we don't have time. Okay. But it was at a German conclave, published in a German magazine, Die Stimme des Glaubens, and I'm not going to spell that for you. But you can find it, just type in the word Fulda, F-U-L-D-A. That was the town in which Pope John Paul convened with these German Catholic clerics, and one of them asked Pope John Paul II, why have we not been told that the third secret of Fatima, which was promised to be released to the world in 1960, and here it was 1980 or 1981, and a third secret had not been revealed yet. And Pope John replied as to the failure to reveal the third secret of Fatima. He said, if some great disaster were to occur which would cause the oceans to spill out of their basins and flood entire land masses and cause millions and millions of people to perish in an instant, would we really want to reveal this information? Is it responsible for us to reveal this? You see, so the Pope spilled the beans. He told us the third secret of Fatima. That proves it was a supernatural statement, prophecy from God, again, to the girls at Fatima, just as God spoke supernaturally to those ignorant girls at Garibaldi in 1964 and told them that there would be a great heat and people will kill each other and that no motor on earth would be able to operate, just as God spoke to Edgar Casey and many other people. Gordon Michael Scallion said in the great documentary Ancient Prophecies on ABC TV, he said, the earth becomes very quiet in the turn of the century, around the year 2000 and thereafter. The earth becomes very quiet, and then a great wind occurs, and I saw the oceans themselves buckle, and land masses were thrust up out of the ocean. And I couldn't sleep for 3 days. I had to sleep for 3 days after seeing that vision. Land masses thrust up out of the ocean. This is the same thing that Edgar Casey prophesied. So we have all these people being contacted by God and warning them that they have to turn their hearts to God.
All right.
Their minds and thoughts.
Well, John, we're definitely at the end here. I've stretched it as far as I can. We're about 8 minutes over. But John, I thank you so much. And listeners are telling me I need to have you back and maybe do a show just on Casey. And maybe go, you know, talk about the prophecies again in length, and we can do that. So maybe in November, if you're interested, we could put something together.
Yes, I would be thankful for that invitation.
All right, great. Anything you want to get out there before we're done, by all means, go right ahead.
Well, I think everything we're learning today is that God is the one who's bringing this upon us. He prophesied, he tells us in the book of Isaiah that he is the one who's going to bring the poles to shift, cause the shifting of the poles and cause the earth to topple, to reel to and fro like a drunkard and then to topple. Like a top that's spinning and slowing down. And that would be the pole shift, which would be globally catastrophic. So God is saying, please, turn your mind to me. Just imagine God's invisible presence. I try to do that every day. Invisible presence of God is with us. It keeps our heart beating. We take it for granted, but our heart beats by some supernatural power. So God loves us. He created us because he loves us. And he desperately wants us to commune with him. We can't embrace him, but we can, in our mind, imagine his real invisible presence, and that will save us.
All right. Well, thank you again, John. Any website or anything you want to throw out there for people, or just your Vimeo and Facebook?
The Vimeo, yeah, just type in my name, John DiNardo, D-I, capital N-A-R-D-O, on Google and Vimeo. And also the website is The Light of Day Radio Show, thelightofdayradioshow.com. Click on the Planet X logo at the top.
Okay, and I do have that one linked up on our homepage on latenightinthemidlands.com. So if anybody missed that, you can go to our homepage, and it's there, and it'll be there probably until late tomorrow morning sometime. So it's there for you. But, John, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, Michael. I'm happy to be with you and your audience, as always.
Oh, yes, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much. Keep up the great work, and I'll be in touch with you, and we could set something up for November.
Terrific.
All right.
Thanks so much, Michael.
All right. Hey, have a great Halloween, too.
I don't think so. But thanks anyway.
All right. Bye-bye.
I'll be eating all the candy.
Well, that's what makes a great Halloween, I guess. Any day, really, is the candy. So, all right. Well, thanks, John. And right. Have a good one, my friend.
Good night, Michael.
All right. Good night. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the first hour of Late Night in the Midlands. To finish listening to this episode, go to lnmradionetwork.com and become a subscriber. Becoming a subscriber is easy. There is a link on every page to take you to the subscription page. The cost is low, and you would be supporting Late Night in the Midlands and all of our efforts to bring you the truth. Again, go to lnmradionetwork.com, click on the subscribe button, and you can finish listening to this episode as well as all of the other shows that are in our archives.